everybody, and welcome to the EC Method. I am one of your coaches, Chloe Madeley.
And I am your other coach, Emma Story Gordon. Our goal at the EC Method is to encourage, educate, and empower you to get the results that you've always wanted.
Listen to our weekly podcasts, go to our website, theecmethod.co.uk, or simply follow us on Instagram to get more information.
Live.
Hey gang.
Hi, how is everyone? How are
Everyone's great. You know, Emma, you know, I'm sure people who follow me on social media have probably picked up on the fact that I'm having a bit of a mental week, but it's a good thing. Everything's good. I just told Emma, I'm invoking Emma into my being and I'm being very positive instead of completely overwhelmed.
Busy.
How are you,
is
Emma?
Good.
What's going on in your world?
I'm also busy, but busy's good. I like busy. I think I get really bored if I'm not.
Yeah, I just get panicky. I panic either way. This is my problem. This is why I know it's all about perception, is that if I'm not working, I panic. If I'm working loads, I panic. And I'm just like, this is fucking ridiculous. I've got to, like, toughen up. But I'm doing good. I know I'm busy, but I slept through the night last night, which was good. A sign that I'm changing and growing. And everyone, just for those of you, I know a lot of you have bought my books or listened to the podcast. The podcast is back in the first week of December, and Emma is a guest, and we do spend a full hour talking about you lot. So make sure you hear that one.
Yeah, we do. That was a lot of fun. Okay, right. We're going to try today to get through all the questions so that on Friday we can do a topic podcast. Boom. So yes. Let's start with, when should you start upping weights? I've seen a couple of posts where people have moved too early and got hurt. Is there a clear indicator of when something is now too light? I've not seen many people go too early and get hurt.
Me neither. I think people have gotten injured, but don't, you know, guys, when you, people who are getting injured, don't look on from afar and be scared. A lot of the time, and I hate to be like, you know, the bearer of bad news or like Mrs. Doomsday, but a lot of the time this person is susceptible to injury, and it is just a matter of time before being an active person and training will catch up with them. So don't freak out. In terms of knowing when to increase your weight, it's, we give you sets and rep ranges, let's say 3 to 4 sets of 6 to 15 reps, and the second that you are surpassing that and you're absolutely fine, that's a sign that you need to increase your intensity and the weight you're lifting. And or let's say that you're lifting a nice middle ground there of like 8 reps of something, and you want to see if you can increase it a little and see if you can either bang out 8 reps, or if you have to drop down to 6, that's fine too. Emma?
Yeah, I think a really simple way to look at it is when you can lift the given reps with good form, it's time to move up the weight. Like, that's the simplest way to put it. Okay, mm-hmm. Next question. After the other week and all of the squat videos, I realized I'm definitely leaning forward. I've watched some videos and did some reading on form. I've been using a chair, but I then plop myself down. I can't get out of my head how to sit back. It feels like I'm trying to undo years of incorrect form. Do you have any tips, or is it best to carry on and get a PT session after lockdown? If you post a video of what you're doing, because there's often really simple things, like, do you remember when it went round a lot? And I remember getting told this when I first started working in Virgin Active. Someone, like one of the other trainers, was like, yeah, so when you squat, you never want your knees to come over your toes.
Mm.
And that, like, actually can, for a lot of people, create really bad squat form. And for a lot of people, mm-hmm. their knees going over their toes is important. So it might be that you've got something like that stuck in your head, and that's why you're moving in certain patterns. I even quite like to think of my knees moving out the way. Like, that's the first movement. It's almost that your knees are moving out, and then you're squatting down.
Like,
and you're like, sitting on your heels, effectively, is what you want to get at. But yeah, there's loads of things we can show you. But yeah, if you can get a face-to-face personal trainer after lockdown, they might be able to give you some tips as well. But if you post the video, we can see where you're going wrong, and then we can correct you from there.
Yeah, I think it's really common that women think that, oh, just tell me, can you see enough of me? Women seem to think that squatting is kind of this movement. Yeah. It's not the movement. I like to say, like, I'm just going to come down a bit here just so you can kind of see. Think of like a, you know, those meter sticks, those like big, long meter sticks. Think that one is like strapped to your back, attached to your back, because your back should not be doing any of this movement. Your back should be solid. And you come down just, sorry, my butt is hitting the chair, so that won't look very good. You come down just at the hips until you sit into it. You're not, you, she says something about sitting back. You're not sitting back. You're not sitting back. And your back is straight. You're just coming down to basically hang out down here like you're a gangster.
Yeah, I think that is often where people get, they tend to like hinge at the hips first, when actually that's what you want to do for like a deadlift, but not for a squat.
Yeah, or like good mornings. But a squat is like your back, your spine should be straight, you know, and you shouldn't be made, it shouldn't really be moving anyway. The movement comes at the hips and the knees, and you just sit your bum down into that gap, and then you push up through the heels. And you stand up. Try squatting while thinking about that. And if you're still having, and like Emma said, put it up on the group. And if you're still having problems, yeah, getting a PT to correct bad form. I do it. I've got bad form on loads of stuff that I have to work on all the time. And I train with like great lifters, great power lifters who help me. It's a really good idea.
Yeah. And I think even if you are yourself a great power lifter, like someone else seeing your form, you can't really see yourself when you squat. And even when you're looking in the mirror, like a lot of people don't allow mirrors because they're like, if you're looking at yourself, then there's always that like time delay between the two movements, and it actually just puts you off, and then you're trying to correct something, and rather than like feeling the movement and feeling what squat should look like, you're watching yourself do it. So there are pros and cons to things, but I do think that even really experienced lifters, having someone else look at their form and critique their form is really important. And you can very quickly, if you train on your own, get into bad habits because you don't see yourself doing them. Okay, next question. My question is, I am totally loving the program and finding it a great new way of life, but I tend to lose my discipline after the second glass of wine, except for not drinking, which is not an option. How can I manage my ill discipline with food?
Okay, well, first of all, I would say, you're literally answering your own question and also you're also creating a problem that doesn't need to be a problem. So the first thing I say is, she says after her second glass of wine, then she overeats. So stop at one. And if not drinking isn't an option, then neither is overeating. So we can't help you. Like, you're putting us in a lose-lose situation. Either stop drinking, so you stop overeating, or stop at the first glass, so you don't have the second glass, and then overeat. That's it.
Mm. Or realize that, like, yeah, you're right. After a couple of glasses of wine, you do have reduced, not even reduced willpower, just you probably just don't really care as much. You're not thinking as clearly. And you're certainly not thinking into the future. So I guess either avoiding that or realizing that you can have two glasses of wine. Like, I think this often comes up with things like, I can't have two cookies and then just stop. Like, it's this self-fulfilling prophecy that you think something's bad is going to happen, or almost that you allow yourself that because you're like, every time I have two glasses of wine, I end up overeating. And you're like, not only giving that self-fulfilling prophecy, but allowing yourself to do that because you've had the wine. So I think question that as well. But I would say, if this is always coming up and it's always happening and that's always where you fall off track, it's time to change something. Nothing changes if nothing changes.
Right?
Okay. Right. I do get slumps when I'm dieting. How do I overcome this? I had a good week the week before and not a great week this week. I think I'm due on. Thanks again, girls, for the great content and support, even though I'm not really adding much to the Facebook page. Laughing face emoji, kiss, kiss. Do you want me to start speaking the emojis?
Yes, okay. I absolutely do. Have you interpreted what she means by slump? Because I haven't really, and I don't want to say anything.
Okay, right. I think what she means is that she'll have a good week of dieting, and then she'll have a hard week, and then it's a bit of a roller coaster.
Yeah. Well, yeah, this will happen with menstrual cycles. You will have weeks where you feel like really strong mentally and physically, and you'll have weeks where you feel really weak, really mentally and physically. And it happens so often. Emma and I, and we've talked about this a million times, when it comes to that week that you feel like that, if it really is hormonal. We do often talk about bringing your calories up to maintenance, and likely you'll still be in a deficit because your thermogenesis increases when you're menstruating. So there's that option. Worst way, you know, you're at maintenance for a week. That's completely fine. And we also talk about having deload weeks. So this could be either doing less training days, like sessions, less time spent in those sessions, or even, you know, just swapping it out for going for long walks. And if you feel like you can do a session, try. But this is really common and really normal. And those are usually the things that we advise.
Yeah, I think this comes with like rolling levels of motivation as well, that yeah, you will have some weeks where everything feels great, everything just slots into place, all your workouts are good, and you'll have weeks where you can't be asked to work out but you get them done, you don't enjoy it that much, and dieting's a little bit harder. And I think that's just part of life. Like, that's true with anything.
Yeah.
Like, you'll have weeks at work where everything just works and it's going so well and you absolutely yeah. love your job, and then you'll have weeks where a million little things go wrong and you just find it really frustrating. There's no way around that. You just have to work through it and realize that it's completely normal. I think sometimes, like, these questions, it's just about a little bit of reassurance that everyone feels that and there isn't a solution to it, unfortunately, but that it's normal that you feel that way.
It's so true. It's everything in life: dieting, work, stress, whatever, like your marriage. Like, you'll have good weeks and bad weeks, and that is what it is. It's exactly what, did we talk about this in the podcast yesterday, or did we talk about it on the EC method at some point? Sitting with it, just sit with it, and don't think that you have to react to it or overindulge it. Just accept it and go with it.
Yeah.
What did we talk about that on?
I didn't. We spoke about a load of good things yesterday.
Yeah, we did. Anyway.
Okay. My partner and I are thinking of having a baby. Woohoo! I'm almost 41 and I'm trying to lose some fat. I have been good with hitting all of my non-negotiables and I've lost almost half a stone in round one. I will continue to lose weight as we start trying, but is there anything I should or shouldn't do to help my chances, bearing in mind my age and weight? My weight is 184 pounds. Which annoyingly doesn't give us all that much context because we don't know how...
No.
tall you are and how yeah. much of that's body fat, because this question's quite hard, because if you said oh, I weigh 120 pounds, I'd be like, right, we'll probably, I mean, give, I don't know how tall you are, so again, that's hard, but basically if you had very low body fat, that is not good for conceiving a child or for being fertile. Equally, being very overweight is not good for being fertile. So anywhere in between is great. So we want you to maintain a healthy weight. And I don't know what that is for you, because I don't know what your height is, or even I don't know like the range. Because as we've spoken about before, there isn't one defined healthy weight. There is a range of weight which you would be healthy at. And that's what we want to get you in. Now, I don't know if you're over that or not.
Yeah, I agree. We don't really have enough information. Look, if you know, just from looking at yourself and hopefully being pragmatic and objective and not, you know, mental, which, don't worry, that's not a dig, we all are, that you have a significant amount of body fat to lose, exactly what Emma said. You can carry on in your deficit, but a healthy deficit. We wouldn't like crash diet you on 800 calories or start doing like intermittent or prolonged fasting. A healthy, happy, kind of stable calorie deficit that you can maintain over the course of the next few weeks and or months. Is likely going to help you. But exactly what Emma said, on the flip side, if you're like super lean and you don't really have much body fat, we probably would need to start bringing your calories up and get a really nice, healthy amount of body fat on you. You know, there is this big misconception with what we do that like we want you all to get shredded and get rid of all your body fat. It's actually really not healthy. It's actually really suboptimal to hormonal health and even performance, recovery, hypertrophy, everything. It is healthy to have a smidge of body fat. And this is about objectivity. Unless you're going to send us photos and give us a good amount of data, your objectivity is king.
Yep. So yeah, I would, if you can send us some photos or at least tell us your height so that we can figure out like your rough BMI and where you might be sitting in terms of body composition. One more thing on that, like one thing that a lot of people do and is sometimes just a good way to cut calories is cutting fat from their diet. because it's so calorie dense. It's quite, you know, eating a relatively low or lower fat diet is often a way that's quite easy to stick to your calories. That's something I would want you to be quite aware of, because as Chloe just mentioned, hormonal health is largely dictated by what, not only your fat stores, but it also requires dietary fat as well for sort of optimal hormonal yes. health. So that's going to be important as well. So make sure you're not going too low on the fat. Lots of oily fish.
I would pull some carbs. Energy macros. I talk about this in my next book, like ad nauseum. Energy macros are the macros obviously to play with, because fats have so high a calorie per gram comparatively to protein and carbs. So they're very easy to bring down while still getting a good amount of fat in. However, your fat intake should always be kind of moderate. It should never be low. Carbohydrates, really, those are the, if we're talking about hormones, talking about reproductive health, those are the that's the macro we would like you to pull from in terms of reducing calories.
Curious to know why I don't hear you talking about heart rate training zones. Do you ever encourage heart rate monitoring for fat loss, 60 to 70% of max heart rate, to avoid insufficient or overtraining if fat loss is the specific goal? Thanks for sharing your awesome knowledge. After way too many years out of the game due to burnout, you've motivated me to seriously think about returning to fitness coaching. Thanks again. Smiley face emoji.
So obviously, you know, different heart rate zones will dictate different energy systems used within the body. But ultimately, Emma and I don't give a shit if you are burning glycogen or if you're burning body fat in terms of your energy system that your body is using to fuel a session. Because ultimately, what does it come down to, Emma?
Energy balance. At the end of the day,
total calories.
Yeah.
Yes, total calories consumed and expended. And that is all that fucking matters. So if you're doing an hour long walk in the fat burning zone and you burn, let's say, 300 calories, right? And then you do a 20 minute HIIT session, right, where you're predominantly burning glycogen, but also a bit of body fat for the recovery portion of it, and you burn 300 calories, we don't care if it's for fat loss. Now, if you're a performance athlete, that advice would change drastically. But you're not, so we don't care. Emma?
Yeah, agreed. I think people get really caught up on this because people just misinterpret a little bit of science, which is that, yeah, the lower, basically, you know, if you wanted to burn the most fat as possible, so you have what's called your RER, your, actually, what does that even stand for? I can't remember now. Relative ratio. Anyway, basically, it's the ratio of carbohydrate to fat that you're burning at any given respiratory exchange ratio. Boom, that's what it's called. respiratory exchange ratio. And that's the percentage of carbohydrates to fats that you're burning at any given moment. Your highest percentage burning of fat is going to be at rest. And that's because it's going to produce the most energy from oxidizing that, but it also takes the most oxygen and takes the most time. So whenever we are asking the body to deliver energy at any given speed, so if I just got up and started doing some burpees and I immediately need energy to fuel that, it will start to become anaerobic. So I'll be breaking down glycogen or breaking down glucose without oxygen, because there isn't enough time for the oxygen to get to that working muscle. That's why at different percentages of your heart rate max, or another way of looking at that is different exercise intensities, you will burn a different amount of carbohydrates to fats at that given moment. Now, it might sound like it's a good thing if I'm like, oh, you're in your fat burning zone, that means you're burning fat. That doesn't mean that you're burning stored body fat for fuel.
Yeah.
That just means that at that moment, you're utilizing fat more than carbohydrates. But what would happen over the full day is completely different. And actually, I think a lot of people shoot themselves in the foot here because they're like, oh, I was going to go for a run, but actually a brisk walk will put me in my fat burning zone and that'll be better. And I'm like, you would have burnt a hell of a lot more calories if you'd gone for a run for the same given period of time. So don't fall into that trap. And often it's just way overthinking it as well. Like there's, you don't need to know which heart rate zone you're in or stress about that either.
Totally. And like just a really quick touch on fasted cardio there, just really nice off the back of what Emma said. Fasted cardio does oxidize more fat when body fat when you are training. However, they've done multiple studies where they have groups doing fasted cardio and groups doing fed cardio, and they're all at the same, well, their relative maintenance calories or calorie deficits. And at the end of the week, there was no difference in who, or the end of the plan, there was no difference in who had burned more body fat, because it all comes down to total calories. And the only people who really need to be concerned about what training zone they're in are professional athletes. Nobody else needs to worry about whether they're doing HIIT, moderate intensity, or steady state cardio.
Agreed. Okay, have you seen this device? We've actually had two questions about this, and two people have asked me on Instagram as well, the Lumen device.
Yeah, you did a whole post on it, didn't you?
I did. So I wrote this post in like 2016, so it must have just like come back round. But basically,
go on.
It's this device that I think you just blow into, and it's meant to measure how much carbs or fats you're metabolizing, which kind of relates back to what we were just talking about. And it uses RER, so your respiratory exchange ratio, which is calculated by the amount of oxygen consumed by the body compared to the amount of carbon dioxide you're consuming, you're expending, I guess. Yeah. And that would indicate how much of each macronutrient you're metabolizing. And I mean, is there any, I don't know what the claims are now, like about, like, why would you want this device? Can see if you're like burning more fat.
Yeah, unless you have some kind of metabolic dysfunction.
Okay. Apparently, the website says Lumen trains your body to use carbs you consume more efficiently. I've written, obviously, there is no mention of how, because the best way to do that is to increase insulin sensitivity, and the best way to do that is to exercise and lose excess body fat. They also talk about dieting with no mention of calories or energy balance. If you want to diet, there are much better uses of 300 odd pounds, for example, the EC method for a good four or five rounds, like, or literally anything else. There might be a place for something like this with elite sport.
Sport or like metabolic dysfunction, people who really need to monitor how their body is metabolizing different foods.
Yeah, but I just can't see why you would need to know that. Or more to the point, what you would do with that information. I think that's the worry. Okay, so let's say we gave everyone on the EC method one of these. What are we telling them to do with that information? Oh, how interesting. You just ate a really carb-heavy meal. Now blow into this device that's telling you you're burning a lot of carbs. No shit. Oh, you ate a high-fat meal. You're burning more fat. Cool. Like, you're paying £300 to literally tell you nothing. And I think you kind of see this with like getting obsessed with Fitbits or having like tracking your sleep and just tracking everything. And my question is why? Like, what are you doing with this information? And if nothing, then often it's just stressing you out.
Oh, totally. Yeah. Do you know what's so funny as well is that I've had multiple clients before who were on a ketogenic diet and were hell-bent on staying in one. So fine, you know, do what the client wants to do and you help them to do it. And I had a client before who was like, she was so certain that she was like really super well-versed on ketosis and everything. And she messaged me one day and she was like, and this is, you know, you pee on those ketone measuring sticks. And they tell you how many ketone bodies you've got at any given time. And she was like, I went for my workout and I came back and my ketone bodies were way down. And I was like, stop and think. You're in ketosis. Yes, yes. What is your body using for energy? Ketones. Why are your ketone bodies down? Because you just did a workout. So, and I said to her, stop peeing on the fucking stick. If you know that you're in ketosis, we're done. Like, that's it. We're done. Like, stop doing it. And this is people who get obsessed, like overly obsessed with tracking everything that they don't need to be tracking.
And I said to her, stop peeing on the fucking stick.
Stop peeing on the fucking ketone stage. But this is exactly that in a different context. Why? We don't, it's not relevant. Like, we're putting you on a track. We're making sure that you stay on that track. Once you're on it, we don't need to overanalyze everything all the time.
Yeah, exactly. Okay, next question. I feel like I'm being quietly coached by both of you and only just scratching the surface of what's achievable. I may actually finally get the results I want with your support and the support of the group. Thank you so much. That wasn't a question, but that was lovely.
Thanks, babes.
Here's one. I'm round one and I have a fat loss goal and I'm making steady progress and I'm happy. I was wondering if Accountability Christmas would be a good time to change lanes to hypertrophy, given that it allows more calories and needs more carbs. I thought it might make sense. If so, is it possible to achieve hypertrophy at maintenance calories, or will a small surplus be required to achieve results? Thank you. Feel like we've gone over this many times, but I do get that this, like, people just like this, like, black and white way of thinking, and I think it's confusing, because if you have quite a lot of fat to lose, you don't need to be in a surplus. Like, if you've got quite a lot of fat to lose and you're quite new to exercise, you don't need to be in a surplus to be in a hypertrophy phase. Mm-hmm. Especially not if your, like, medium to longer term goal is still fat loss. Like, it wouldn't make much sense. You know, it's like, if you think logically, like, you've got someone who's carrying a lot of body fat and we're like, we're going to build some muscle. It's fine to have a muscle building goal. But we don't also need to pile you into a surplus when you have already got a lot of excess fat there. So not always, you don't always need to be in a surplus. In fact, in certain situations, you can build muscle in a deficit.
Yes. If you have enough body fat, which apparently you do. So, for you, although I do love your thinking, I love the fact that you're strategizing, like, how can I basically be accountable this Christmas, and how can I make that easier for me behaviorally so I don't, you know, fall in the fuck it bucket. And what I would say for you is that you stay on in your deficit, and as and when during Accountability Christmas, and we will be talking about this frequently when we start it, you might want a diet break. That's what we do, and therefore it's a lot more short term. It still keeps you on track to your fat loss goals, but it allows you some freedom over Christmas. And all of you will be different. This advice will vary from person to person, but given the question in and of itself, I would say that is probably a better answer than putting you into a slight surplus if you've got a lot of body fat.
Mm-hmm. The other thing as well is, you don't need to, like, what's the word I'm looking for? Have a reason to increase your calories. If you're just like, you know what, over Christmas I want to eat at least at maintenance, if not in a slight surplus because I want to, that's absolutely fine as well. Like, that is your choice to do, and I don't want you to feel like you should diet because you have long-term body fat to lose. If you decide over Christmas I want to be in a bit of a surplus, I don't want to be going crazy, I don't want to put on 10 pounds over Christmas, but I'd like to be in a slight surplus because
I did that and it's pre-Christmas. My shit. What's going to happen in the next 4 weeks? Go on.
But, you know, like, you don't have to justify that to anyone or to anything. You just say that that's what I want to do, and it's your choice to do that. And there's no should or that you have to be forced to do something. So, yeah, even if you have a lot of body fat to lose, if you decide over Christmas you want to be in a surplus, fine. But do make that choice in the knowledge of what the result of that will be, which will be that you will probably, if you're in a surplus, put on some body fat again.
Yeah.
Absolutely fine. We can lose that again. But that's the choice you're making in that knowledge. And then you're making, like, an educated choice as opposed to just, like, letting things happen to you.
Yeah, I love that. And I completely agree. But again, full circle, like, exactly what Emma said. You know, we talk about this all the time. I think I took a grab of this and put it on my Instagram page of our last time we talked about this. That's fine. If you're like, it's Christmas and I'm happy to gain a couple of extra pounds because I want to eat like it's Christmas, fine. But that's your goal. And if me saying that makes you go, no, I definitely don't want that to happen, then it's actually probably quite a good thing for you because you're clearly quite goal orientated. And that means you're probably likely to get the results you want more so than someone who's a little bit more wishy-washy. And if you are, you know, goal orientated, again, all of this advice will change for you. So Yeah, I mean, either accept and chill out that you're going to gain a little bit of weight over Christmas and you can still be accountable, or like I say, we could do a diet break and then you can have a bit more freedom, but that would still keep you on track. But I love what Emma said. I think there's way too much shame built around, like, ooh, I decided that I wanted to eat a full Christmas dinner and not diet.
Or even, and I don't know if this is like more, it's more actually clients that say it to us, is that like, should I be doing this? Or even like the assumption that they should be in a hypertrophy phase or in a fat loss phase, or they should diet over Christmas, or they should do, you don't need to do anything. It's completely your choice. Yeah. And we're here to support the choice that you make.
Yeah.
Okay, next question. I overdid it on the Prosecco during the week, which caused fluctuations on the scales as expected. I had a great time, so I have no regrets. Just wondering if the fluctuations were due to dehydration or whether water retention can mask fat loss. Well, both can happen.
Alcohol will...
I think it's hard to say because nothing happens in isolation. Like, I'm willing to bet you probably ate something that was a little bit more salty as well, which means that you could have retained water but also been a bit dehydrated from the Prosecco, and there's a bit of a combination of things going on. Is the dog here?
Yeah, the dog's here. Exactly what Emma said. It will absolutely play around with your scale weight. Alcohol and kind of water... fluctuations in your diet will equal fluctuations on the scale for exactly those reasons. Dehydration, which can then, you know, which will see the scales drop, which can then lead to water retention, which will see the scales rise, and round and round and round we go. This is one of those situations where, just like, you know, we talk about having high fiber meals before bed or high sodium meals before bed, you're just going to have to be a little bit aware of what the scales are going to do and crack on regardless.
Agreed. Okay, we're moving on to grad questions. I'm interested to understand, ooh, in hypertrophy, how muscles come through. Is there a typical order in which muscles develop / show quicker? I remember you saying that triceps and lower body take longer. That's not necessarily true. Yeah, well, I mean, yeah, it is body fat, but then it's also, you only really see the muscle once you lose the body fat, so it can look like the same thing is happening, as in, like, it can look like it takes ages for your triceps to build, but that's just because you store more fat around there, so you don't tend to see them as quickly. So there's a bit of a combination of both. Most people have like dominant muscles, and again, it's quite individual. Some people find that they respond very well to certain body parts of training and other places lag behind, but that's
I think that there's been a misunderstanding. So when I talk about women and body fat and areas which typically, just genetically for women, tend to be slow to respond and happy to hold on to body fat, it does tend to be lower body fat on the lower part of the legs, which I think a lot of people don't really realize until they get lean, and then they're like, that part still looks the same. And triceps, it's just genetics. So there's that. But not, that doesn't apply to hypertrophy. Hypertrophy, the areas where, as Emma said, you are likely to, like, so I can say I've got big quads. I've always had big quads. Obviously, now I train, they're pretty significant. And there's that. But that will be different for everybody. Like, James has not got a particularly good lower body, but all he has to do is, like, pick up a weight and his biceps come, like, shooting out at me. I have really shit biceps. Like, this, again, that's genetic. You will see your muscles develop on areas where they were always going to if you started lifting. And other areas will take a longer time. Like, my glutes are shit. And that's because I've got a lordotic spine, so it takes a lot to get them to fire. It's just genetics, really.
It is often muscle recruitment as well, isn't it? That, like, some men have really poorly defined chests, and it's usually because they overcompensate with their shoulders. So it's not necessarily that they're weak in a given movement. It's just that they're using their shoulders more than their chest, or their triceps more than their chest or something. So that, and same with, like, people who squat that might be more quad dominant than glute dominant. And that tends to show in how their muscles are building as well.
But you see it in race as well. Like, there are, like, white bodybuilders in the gym who are killing themselves trying to get pecs. and like a black bodybuilder will just come in and be like, bang. But then you see those white guys in the gym with like great calves, and the black bodybuilder's like, I can't get my calves to grow. And like, I'm not trying to generalize. Obviously, that is a very generalized statement. But you do see different body parts develop differently in different races. Like Emma and I always talk about Brazilian girls. They do have fantastic glutes by and large. And that is genetic. So it's fucking interesting. And it's actually like, could be a really cool topic in and of itself.
Yeah, well, it's so interesting. Even when you look at like elite athletes and like you look at the marathon or any long distance event, and it's like all Ethiopians or Kenyans. And part of the reason for that
and that's not a coincidence.
Yeah, because they have like very, well, I think there was a study and it looked at like the girth of their ankle compared to, and it was there was a huge correlation between just like ankle width and ability to run. It was really,
interesting. That's fascinating.
But then if you think about it, over a whole marathon, like the weight of something at the end of a very long lever, which is your leg, can actually really impact how efficient you are and thus how far you can run and how fast you can run.
Yeah. 100. Yeah. James retired because of his shit ankles, shit toes, shit tendons. Just, and if those one things, if he'd been genetically gifted, he'd still be playing professional rugby now.
Okay, right. This is round two for me. I've been starting to think about what my next goal would be once I've got to my fat loss goal. I still have some fat to lose, so not quite there yet. I'm currently on 1500 calories. I hit my steps, my protein's good, and I do 4 to 5 workouts each week. I'm 75 kilograms currently, and I would like to be lower, but I'm thinking my next goal would be maintenance for me. So what would my non-negotiable targets be for maintaining? So your targets don't massively change. Like the things that got you to where you want to be will tend to be the things that maintain you at where you want to be. But you do have a little bit more flexibility. So you could say, like it all comes down to a bit of life balance as well. You could say, I really struggle to get in these 5 workouts. So actually at maintenance, I want to drop to 4, but I'm going to keep my steps and my calories the same. And you'll be fine maintaining there. Or you might say, it's ridiculously hard for me to get my steps in. It's something that's doable at the moment, but long term, I'd probably like to drop them down to 10,000 instead of 12,000 steps, for example. Then you might want to maintain there. Or you might want to say, I'm going to keep that the same, but I'm just going to increase my calories. So it all comes back to energy balance. We need you to get into a balance of where basically you want to be eating as much as you expend so that you're maintaining your body weight. And how you do that's quite individual, but those non-negotiables, as in your steps, your calories, your workouts, like those things stay the same. The numbers might change, but the same principles are still what's really important. So they should still be what you're focusing on.
Yeah, I have nothing to say exactly that. What is it you always say? What builds muscle maintains muscle. What got you the results is going to maintain the results. Obviously, you don't need to work quite as hard, but yeah.
I find maintenance much harder.
Me too. It's
because we're bored of it.
Right, but that's what I was just saying to that previous girl who was talking about whether or not she should go into a surplus over Christmas. Some people just need a goal.
Yeah.
And I think we're two of them. Yeah. Otherwise, I'm just like,
But I think what's hard as well is like I, not so much now, but previously, like I like being really lean and shredded and I like being big and strong. But you know what is boring as hell? That bit in the middle. Like that bit in the middle where you're not lean, but you're not strong. And it's just like really dull.
Shit.
Yeah. You're just like mediocre. And I just hate being middle ground.
I hate being, I agree. I don't mind being bigger. Like just like, oh, I'm in a strength phase or whatever. Like don't really care. You know, I love being shredded because I'm like, I look the part right now. That middle bit where you're just like, oh, I look like, you know, I'm about to go on Love Island.
I'm not in great shape. I look basic as hell and I can't even lift much because I've not got to the point of being really strong yet. That's the
worst part. My god, it's also the worst part for your glutes as well. We've talked about this before. When you're bigger, your glutes like bam, and when you're lean, you're like, ooh, I can see muscle, and then in between you're just like, where's my ass?
Who's got it?
Where is it?
Okay, next question. Not really a question. You guys have been great and already responded to me on Facebook. I just need to get my shit together because you speak the truth and I'm only responsible for what happens next. Huh. Okay, well, you've nailed that one yourself. If I've gained some body fat during hypertrophy, which is making me nervous, should I ignore it and trust the process or go back to fat loss? I am a grad who is lifting heavier and making progress, but struggling to reach the 10,000 steps and wondered if this is part and parcel of hypertrophy or if I've gained too much and should now switch back. I think where you are is basically what we were just talking about. That kind of boring stage where you have put on a little bit of body fat. So you're like, I can't see my muscle as much anymore, but I'm not really strong yet. And this is always a tempting time to be like, well, just go back into fat loss.
Yeah, go back. Yeah.
It's hard to tell because we don't know, like, how much body fat you've put on or anything. I mean, what I would say is this is all, it's all so hard with these hypertrophy goals because it's completely dependent on your starting point. Like, if you are very lean, then yes, you need to put on a little bit of body fat to make sure that you can build muscle. If you're not that lean to start with, you don't need to put on much weight. You can sit around maintenance and you can build muscle around there. And you don't need to continuously be putting on weight, like, week on week kind of thing, because we know that how slow the rate of hypertrophy is. And when you really do the numbers and put the numbers in, like, you're looking at, if you're building a moderate amount of muscle, like an increase of like 50 calories a day, if that was all to go to building muscle, which is a tiny amount of a surplus. So that's why we say like sitting around maintenance but erring on the side of a surplus is usually what's best for most people in hypertrophy. But again, it depends on your starting point. If you've started with visible abs, you'll need to be in a slightly bigger surplus than that initially to put on some body fat. But again, if you have a lot of body fat to lose, you probably don't want to be in a surplus at all.
Yeah, I agree. I think, look, like, if you're in the thick of a hypertrophy phase, we don't want you going back into fat loss because you've gained a little bit more body fat than you wanted to gain. It's very normal and it does happen. And it is just a transitionary phase. It's normally the result of the transition between being in a deficit and increasing calories. And some people, if not most, people, I know I certainly do, sometimes become a little bit laissez-faire with calories. And the result of that Laissez-faire. French, like, you know, throwaway. Like, French thing. Ooh la la. People do just become really, like, you know, whatever, basically, for lack of a better word, about, you know, being stricter with calories because they're not in fat loss anymore. And the byproduct of that, the result of that, is that you gain a bit more body fat. That does not necessarily mean that you go back to fat loss because the goal is different now. The goal is hypertrophy. Therefore, a little bit of added body fat isn't a problem because it's not dictating the goal. However, the caveat to everything I've just said is if you've gained so much body fat, right, that you are, and actually I talk about this in the mini cut file, so do read that, that you're uncomfortable, there is, you know, potentially what we could do is we could do, and not necessarily at the beginning of hypertrophy, but if you've been in hypertrophy for at least a few months, we can do a little mini cut where we just get in and out, like a short, sharp, quick, quite savage dieting phase that lasts, you know, no more than kind of what, like 4 to 6 weeks in that bracket, because you don't want any metabolic adaptation happening. It's not a real fat loss phase, right? So you get in, go straight down to like 1500 calories, stay there for 4 to 6 weeks, get out, go straight back up to maintenance, and likely you will have lost anywhere between 2 to 6 pounds if you do it properly, and you'll feel more comfortable. But that is really like, that's really only if you're so uncomfortable that you know you're going to struggle to stay on in your hypertrophy phase. And even then, it has to happen at least a few months in.
Agreed. Okay, last question today. Is it harder to build or to be in a hypertrophy phase without going to the gym? Basically, is it harder to build muscle at home? Which I think we've covered.
Yes.
Yes, it is, frankly. Is it impossible? Absolutely not. Is it harder? Yes. Does it really matter for a month? So I think what some people take from that when we say, oh, it's harder to build muscle at home, so they're like, oh, okay, during lockdown, I'll just go back to fat loss. No, that doesn't make any sense. Like, why is fat loss always the go-to? Oh, well, I may as well just go back to fat loss. No, you may as well not just go back to fat loss. Because you probably end up being in a,
It's like saying I'm not in hell anymore, so I'm like somewhere in between hell and heaven, but I'll just go back to hell because at least I know, well, it's limbo, isn't it?
Yeah, they feel like they're in limbo. And it's wanting a goal, and it's wanting to see some kind of process or have some kind of direction that you can see in a tangible result to that. So I understand why people do it, but if you really question why you're doing it, I think it doesn't make much sense. Like, okay, if the long-term goal is to build some muscle, will you be able to make as much progress during this month that you can't go to the gym? No, but will you be making more progress if you continue doing, like, making your nutrition geared towards hypertrophy as opposed to fat loss? Yes. And would you actually be taking a step backwards if you're now in a catabolic breakdown state in a negative energy balance for that month? In terms of your hypertrophy goal, is that a negative? Yes. So, although you can't stimulate your muscle in quite the same way, or not as easily anyway, you can still be making progress. And I would hedge a bet that, like, probably a good 90%, and at the moment, given that I'm, like, fairly untrained post-injury, I would include myself in this, that most people in the EC method aren't of a training age and experience that they couldn't build muscle at home. I think it's quite different when someone's like, if you're like a power lifter and you're like, am I going to improve my deadlift while doing home workouts? No, you're not. But for most people, actually, yeah, you will be able to increase strength at home.
Yeah, I completely agree with everything you said. And I don't have anything to add to that specifically, but did you see, I think it was yesterday, but the tag didn't work until someone tagged us today, that Becky in the group yesterday was asking what percentage of muscle mass can I expect to gain? And I was like, it is so dependent on so many things. Like, do you really know how to lift? Like, are you like a seasoned lifter? And if you are, then your hypertrophy is going to have, you know, a really substantial effect in comparison to that of a beginner. However, the longer you've been lifting for and the more muscle you've already amassed, the less you're going to increase that hypertrophy, you know, in terms of, you know, percentages to if you're a newbie and you're just lifting weights, your muscle mass kind of increases. You're going to be, they're going to fucking blow an old school lifter out of the water. And it's just like round and round and round you go. You know, how much weight can I expect to gain per week? It's likely not going to happen on a weekly basis, but hopefully if you're doing it right, you are going to be gaining weight over the course of the next few months. And it's just so nuanced and so subjective. But it was a great question. And I do tend to find that when people come out of fat loss and into hypertrophy, the questions get more and more interesting and more fun to answer. And I do love that so many of you have already made that transition.
And I love the theoretical ones as well. It's like, in theory, if I was to stimulate muscle protein synthesis every 3 hours for the rest of my life, like, what would happen? And we're like, ooh, well, actually. Okay, so I've not actually told Chloe this, but I think we're going to put the podcast up until we figure out the Patreon site where only members will be allowed to get in. So for the next couple of weeks, we will still have the podcast up, I guess, till the end of this round, really. Because I know that some people were like, I really struggle to listen to it on Facebook because I try and do it while I'm out getting my steps, etc., etc. So you'll have a couple more podcasts on there. So if you're listening to the podcast and you haven't signed up to Accountability Christmas, but you enjoy the coaching, make sure you sign up to Accountability Christmas. It is theecmethod.co.uk. Boom.
Yeah.
Do you know what? I think that's the first, that's like the first time we've actually done a sales thing. I was listening to another podcast the other day and I realized that like every single podcast of theirs at the end, they're like, go to our website. We're just like, okay, bye. We're like, here's a load of free coaching. Okay, bye. How do you work with us?
Bye. But come on, this is why I get really pissed off with, like, just, you know, normal people. And this is where I'm bad at my job, but my lack of patience. I said this on the last one so many times. I'm like, Google it. Just Google the EC method. The website comes up.
We don't know that that's true, Chloe. Definitely. Oh, okay. Definitely if you put in the ecmethod.co.uk, but I'm not sure if we come up on Google.
No, we do. Shh. The EC method. The EC method, online coaching with Emma and Chloe.
Woohoo.
When you sign up, you have full access. See? It's there. I knew it was there.
Wow. Google it. Check us out. Right, okay, I'll end there.
Okay.